Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready?
Hell yeah! Yeah, right!
Rebel Rise Live. I'm David Johnson along with Dave Bevan. We believe Michael Quirk will be joining us a little bit later in this podcast. It is the day after the Super Bowl, we said, and watched Peyton Manning probably end his NFL career with a Super Bowl championship last night as the Broncos, thanks to their defense, kind of stymied Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers. And you know, I got to tell you, Dave, as far as entertainment value, it was a boring game to watch. And you know what? I think the commercials fell flat as well. That's just my opinion. What did you think about it last night from an entertainment value? Now, if you like good defense, you enjoyed yourself. And as well as the show the NFL put on, I thought it was kind of lackluster considering it was the 50th Super Bowl and they spent all year drilling that into our heads.
Yeah, I'll agree. If you were looking for an all-out great game, you know, it wasn't, especially on the offenses on both sides of the football. It just wasn't that much entertainment to it. And then the commercial-wise piece of it, the only one that really stuck out to my head that was actually funny was the Steve Harvey commercial. In years past, there's been the controversial commercials. Didn't really see much of that this year. So,
they were trying to make a little controversy out of the Doritos commercial where the man and the wife were in the room getting the ultrasound and the baby just shoots right out for the Doritos. A little bit of PC backlash on that. They can forget all that.
There's always one every year. I think was it last year, the year before, the Cheerios commercial. That one was a pretty. But it, as far as the game itself goes, you mentioned it at the beginning of the podcast. Who knows yet if it is Peyton's last professional game.
Dave, it is.
I know.
Because Peyton Manning did the best commercial of the Super Bowl last night when he endorsed Budweiser at the end of the game. Okay, now here's the deal. NFL players are banned from endorsing alcohol or alcohol-related products. Did you know that? So
yeah.
If Peyton Manning were not done, it was a flat-out endorsement for Budweiser, whether he paid for it or not. I think that's a telltale sign, if you needed anything else, is that NFL players cannot endorse alcohol or liquor. Peyton Manning did that immediately following the game last night. Peyton Manning's not coming back, and he doesn't need to. And in a lot of ways, you know, and I'm a Manning family fan, I'll admit that, but in a lot of ways Peyton owes a lot to that defense last night for him going out on top because he, you know, mediocrity, I guess, would be the way to describe his performance through the playoffs and even in the Super Bowl last night. Didn't set the world on fire. He certainly passed his prime. But awesome to see another Manning get another Super Bowl. Four now between the brothers. And they've really cemented their legacy as if it needed any more cementing as the first family of American football. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I thought that was a telltale sign. I thought it was the best commercial of the whole Super Bowl was Peyton Manning said he's going to go kiss his wife and his kids and then drink a lot of Budweiser. So anyway, that's my take on that. But congratulations to Peyton and to the Manning family. And, you know, they hold a special place in the hearts of people around the Ole Miss football program. So that was good to see. One Rebel, Michael Orr, he had a tough time out there on the edge last night, Dave. I don't know if you watched him very closely, but he had a very, very difficult time. No more than any of his other Carolina line mates, but Michael Orr struggled at times last night.
Seven sacks and 5 turnovers. I know a couple of those were causes from fumbles from Cam Newton himself throwing it back to pass. So, yeah, that defense, the Denver defense, that and they've been like that all year. That was a fully complete game from the defense. And Von Miller, defensive end, Texas A&M alum, he definitely deserved that MVP award. He really put that defense on his shoulders and did everything right in that game. And also give credit to the secondary as well, because any time Carolina got into a chance to score, that secondary really kept them out of the end zone and through the air. Michael's on the show now. Michael, what are your thoughts on the Super Bowl?
You know, I feel like we say this every year, but I was a little disappointed in the commercials. I think that ever since the Budweiser was up frogs, that we've just had far too high of expectations. But I was also happy to see Peyton go out on top. It was nice to see that for Manning, and I think Cam's gonna have his opportunity down the road to get his own.
All right. Well, I want to ask both of you guys this, and everybody in the listening audience, think about this. And be honest with yourselves. When the commercial came out last night with the Super Bowl babies, in other words, people who were conceived right after the Super Bowl, that's what the commercial was insinuating, is they had groups of people dressed in the Super Bowl champions' colors from each year and everything. In your mind, mentally, did you go back and calculate, okay, Super Bowl's played in January, I was born in this month, could I be a Super Bowl baby? Did you do that, Michael? Did you try to figure out whether or not you were a Super Bowl baby?
Oh, no, that's not me. I have the unfortunate nature of having some very honest parents, and so they already broke that all down to me. I have 3 siblings. That they were going through all that. They said, telling each sibling, you were this holiday baby. You were this holiday baby. I said, I guess what was I? You were just a drunken knight on your dad's boat. I said, I'm never going on that boat again. So that was an alarming factoid for me.
Yeah, I've often tried to reflect back on my children as to what night it might have been, not necessarily saying it had to be night now, boy, we're crossing the line here, as to when their conception might have actually been. And I'm pretty sure I've got Eli nailed down to an Ole Miss-Tennessee game. I think my daughter Sydney may have been the NFC Championship game back in 97. And with Torrey Kate, I know and I'm not going to say. That's just too close right now. It's too soon right now with her only being 20 months old. But anyway, what about you, Dave? Did you count Super Bowls back and go, maybe I was a 49er baby or anything like that?
I kind of agree with Michael there. I didn't really get that too much into it. And that commercial really didn't stick out to me that much. The one that really, the only one that I really just remember that stuck out and it was blaring all over social media was the Steve Harvey commercial with the T-Mobile and shooting back at Verizon. This is Verizon's fault for messing up the coverage.
Yeah, that was the one with the pink balls going.
You're right,
right.
And
his slogan
was, "It took balls to admit that you're wrong, and it ain't me this time."
Yeah, well, I like Steve Harvey. He does a lot of stuff off camera, so to speak, from a motivational speaking standpoint.
Absolutely.
That is really, really great to listen to. All right, let's talk about, and we are going to talk about some Ole Miss athletics this morning, but let's talk about something else. Of course, Peyton Manning, and I mean, any way you shake it, look, I am glad Peyton Manning is going out on top. And, folks, he's going out. As I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, NFL players are prohibited from endorsing alcoholic beverages, things of that nature, by league rule. Well, Peyton Manning smashed that rule to death last night in his post-game comments when he said, I'm going to kiss my wife and my two kids and then drink a lot of Budweiser. He didn't say beer. He said Budweiser. So be looking for Peyton Manning galloping around on a Clydesdale soon, I would suspect. But I think he's gone. Most everybody thinks he's gone. Surely he won't pull a Brett Favre. Peyton is not the player he once was. He's a great player and always will be remembered as such. But it's obvious that his skill level is on the decline. And he has a rare opportunity for a professional athlete to go out on top. I hope he takes that. He doesn't need any more money. He doesn't need any more fame. No more notoriety. He has nothing to prove to anyone. Peyton Manning's one of the greatest football players ever to play the game. And I hope that we saw his sunset ride last night in high fashion. Now, the thing we want to talk about, the thing I want to talk about quickly, is Cam Newton. And first, let me preface this by saying I'm not a Cam Newton fan. And if you want to know why, it's just because of the backstory that dates back to his recruitment. I don't like things like that. No one ever proved anything, but it's out there. And so I've never been a Cam Newton fan. I don't dislike Cam. I once looked at him on the Ole Miss sidelines, and he gave me a nod and a wink. So I don't have any dislike for him. But there are a lot of people upset with the way he handled himself in the media last night.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one of those people. I'm sorry. You know, people view this as entertainment. Okay, and when you get to the Super Bowl, it's a media orgy. All right? I mean, you not only have the beat writers there and the guys who cover the game and the guys who know what they're writing about. You've got E! Hollywood Reporter. You've got all of these social media outlets that are covering this because it is an event. It's more than a game. Cam Newton owed no one anything. One thing you've got to understand is it's not entertainment to Cam Newton. As much as he wants to dab, it is competition. And it is something that I'm sure, as most red-blooded American boys grow up dreaming of winning a Super Bowl, he just lost one. And 15 minutes after the game's over, if you expect him to be emotionally neutral on that loss, then you're an idiot. And that goes for the press, and that goes for the fans, and everybody that's pounding Cam Newton this morning. I'm going to take up for Cam Newton. He didn't know them any more than what he gave them last night. Okay, now if he wants to talk about it in the days to come, fine. If he doesn't, fine. But last night, you're putting an emotionally charged young man, and he is still a young man, in front of the world, microphones, camera flashes, everything going off, and he's not hospitable enough in his answers to his questions. You know what? I think that shows a positive side of Cam Newton. For all the criticism he's been getting lately, he wanted to win that game. He's a daggum competitor. And you can't expect him to just automatically flip the switch back to, well, guys, thank you all for being here tonight. Yeah, we gave it all. Yeah, you saw raw Cam Newton last night. He was pissed off he lost that game. Michael, what did you think about
it? Yeah, I certainly agree with you on that one. I am a fan of Cam Newton. Despite some of his, you know, the getting kicked off of Florida and sort of all the rumors going around about his re-recruitment after Blinn, but I definitely think that a lot of the criticism of him is that he's an arrogant guy, that he's a self-centered guy, and stuff like that. And Cam definitely loves Cam. I mean, there's no other way around that. But you also, it's hard to see a guy who really gets excited for his teammates, and he really is all in on the team. I mean, he loses his mind whenever Luke Kuechly gets an interception or the defense makes a big stop or Jonathan Stewart gets a rushing touchdown. And I just like to see sort of that passion that he has and how much that dude loves football. So I'm a bit of a Cam Newton fan. I got rubbed the wrong way by a little bit of that press conference, but like you said, he's only human, and he just lost, you know, the most important game of his career thus far. So.
I, Michael, I am so used to seeing athletes win, lose, or draw come in and give you the open up the can of BS. The coach speak, the players speak, where they aren't honest in their emotions. They are not honest in their thoughts. They're giving you what Sports Information expects you to get. They're selling the company line. They're not raw. Newton was raw last night. I appreciated that. I mean, there was nobody in his ear as he's walking to the media room going, well, you know, you need to be gracious in the loss. No, he was honest. You got something that you don't get from very many athletes anymore in this day and age, because everything they say is picked apart and scrutinized. There was no company line Newton was toting. He didn't walk in there and go, great experience for us. We're going to be back. We're going to do everything we can to get back. I mean, you saw he let you in last night. You saw what he was feeling. And that's just where I'm at with Cam Newton. As I said, I'm not a Cam Newton fan, but these people bashing him, let me throw this at you guys. Let's reverse this thing, and let's say that, and I haven't heard one bit of criticism about Peyton Manning talking about he was going to drink a Budweiser. Had Cam Newton said that last night, he would be getting slammed right now in some quarters for not being a good role model, and that's just how the world operates. Have you seen any negative comments about Peyton Manning going to drink Budweiser after the game last night?
No, okay, not at all.
But had Cam Newton said that, Michael? Had Cam Newton said, well, I'm fishing to go drink a lot of Budweiser, would he be getting criticized this morning in the press and in the social media arenas? Do you think he'd be getting slammed a little bit?
Hey, Cam Newton could say he was going to drink Pedialyte after the game and he would be getting slammed.
There you go. That's my point. And that's why I'm not jumping on the slam Cam bandwagon this morning. He's still a kid. He's still a young man, and he gave us the real side of him last night. I like that. You know, I don't think you see enough of that. And I'd say kudos to him. I'll go back to not liking him in a day or two. And again, that all just goes back to his recruitment. But I think people that are bashing him for how he reacted last night, I just don't agree with that. All right, Michael. Let's talk a little something about Ole Miss here. You watched the Rebels knock off Vanderbilt Saturday night and extend the Ole Miss fans' hopes for possibly getting into the big dance a little bit longer. The Rebels they won their 15th game, and they're now 15-8, 5-5 in SEC play. Got a tough one, got to go to Florida, and then Arkansas coming up, which could be the two games that define the rest of the season. But what did you see in there Saturday night at the Pavilion? What was the vibe after the game? I mean, are these guys, are they ready to make a little run?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, during the, you know, losing side without Saez, you could see that the team was, you know, a little frustrated. Not in sort of a hostile way, but they were a little frustrated, and you know, we keep losing guys, losing games in unfortunate ways. Things aren't breaking our way, and you could see it sort of boiling up. But then last night or Saturday night, it appeared as though a switch was turned on. There are a lot of seniors on this team. And their time's running out. And Andy Candy, he reminds them of that every single day. He says that your time's running out. What are you going to do with your last few games here? And you saw all the emotion and the will to not only not win that game, but not to lose that game. And Martavius Newby and Tomas Giello and Stephon Moody were very emotional and very invested in the game. And you could tell that these guys are really wanting to make a run, and they're leaving it all out there. And once Sivas comes back, that's something that that we'll learn sometime today. He's going to follow up from the doctors, and he could be cleared as soon as this morning for returning to action. So we'll find out soon. But once he gets back, and you add him to the mix of Giello with Saez being out, Giello's been able to develop a little bit more. Markkanen Hyman has developed by leaps and bounds by getting thrust into the lineup and having to play a lot of minutes. And really, you add Saiz to that, and this team can make a run. And like I pointed out to some posters on the board yesterday, the bubble this year is incredibly weak, just like it was last year. This isn't a this isn't one where, you know, you have to go in with six losses as a Power 5 team to get in on the bubble. Vanderbilt at 13-9 was just firmly on the bubble before the loss to Ole Miss. So it's certainly possible for Ole Miss to work their way in there.
Certainly possible, too, for and I don't want to be Debbie Downer here, but certainly possible, too, to roll into Gainesville tomorrow night and get your butt handed to you if they don't play well. And then you got to come back home and play Arkansas, and that's no easy ticket right there either. Am I right in thinking these next two ball games are critical, that probably playing on the road in Florida, coming back at home against Arkansas, worst case scenario, they need to split these two to kind of stay in the conversation, because if they get swept, all of a sudden they're 15-10, two games under 500 in the SEC, still got a Texas A&M team to play. You know, it just looks like that the leap from one side of the cliff to the other is going to be very, very wide if the Rebels can't win at least one of the next two. Am I right in that assessment, or do you think otherwise right now?
Yeah, I think if Ole Miss gets swept in those two, then that's really they would have to run the table the rest of the way to be put into consideration, because that's just a really deep hole to be in, and to have seven conference losses at that point.
And I asked that question simply because I think we're in playoff basketball right now, so to speak. If your goal is to get into the NCAA tournament, every single game is important from here on out.
Absolutely. And luckily for Ole Miss, Arkansas is not what we've been accustomed to seeing from Arkansas over the last few years, and certainly not what we saw from Arkansas a couple decades ago. But Florida has been improving dramatically over the course of the year, and beating the number 9 West Virginia team like a drum. And they've been playing really good basketball as of late, and they'll certainly be a tournament team in the first year under Michael White. And so if Ole Miss can get a win down there, and listen, I think that Ole Miss is catching Florida at just the right time for everything that's sort of coming together for Ole Miss and sort of the team game that they've been playing lately. But if they split it, they're certainly still in it. And if they're able to win both of those games, then that could really propel them to a strong finish.
Dave, you're really good at breaking things down and analyzing, you know, different parts of scenarios and everything. So I want to throw this question at you. And you know, think for a second before you answer it, because, you know, I don't think it's an easy question to answer. But if Carly Fiorini and Hillary Clinton got in a death match, no holds barred fist fight, who wins that? Who wins that?
Hillary Clinton and who else now?
Carly Fiorini.
I'm gonna go with
Fiorini. Looks like she'd be a little more fleet on her feet, so to speak. I think she you know, she's got a puncher's chance. Clinton, answer the question, Dave. Come on, you're stalling on me here.
Well, you know, Clinton, she's got that mouth. Maybe she can back it up with some fists. So I think Clinton could win that. I really do.
Clinton's mean. To me, she's mean, Michael.
She's vicious.
I mean, that'd be the thing. It'd be like, you know, she'd be the heel in the match, that's for sure. I don't know. I mean, it's something I've been thinking about. Michael, what do you think? I mean, can you break that down any further?
I don't know. I mean, you see how many pockets are in Hillary's pantsuit that
yes,
she could
yeah.
be hiding anything at any time. So if she's not getting a pat down beforehand, you know she's going to do anything she can to win that one, but Carly, she can be a bulldog, so I think she stands a chance in that one too.
Yeah, well, Carly wears so much makeup, I'd be afraid some of that would, you know, sweat off into her eyes or something and blind her. But you're right about the pantsuits. Hillary Clinton wears the Pat Summit outfits. you know, the women's basketball coaching outfit. She could be a women's basketball coach. She has that demeanor about her and everything. I'm going to have to say Clinton would beat her down. The meanness, you know, the athleticism by virtue of wearing the lady basketball pantsuits. I'm going with Clinton here. Michael Clinton, you're thinking Clinton?
Yeah, don't forget the low center of gravity that she has, too. I think she can get a lot of leverage on Carly. And,
is she shorter than Carly? I mean, are they both short? Is Carly tall? I mean, I've never seen them measured up and weighed in, so I don't know.
Yeah. From just an eyeball test, it looks like Carly has a few inches on her, but you look at where Hillary she gets all of her power from her hip, and could really drive the hook mm-hmm. home. So I got to go with Hillary in this one too.
She's got some big hips. I've noticed that, and just the tailored element of those pantsuits. I agree with you on that, Dave. Any idea?
No, I agree. You know, Hillary would win that. I think she would definitely could back up, you know, the motor with the fist.
She's got more punch, I think. That's just something I think we've been needing to contemplate just a little bit here. Is football season's over? We've seen our last game until golly, guys, September, man.
But is it two hundred something more days until the next game?
I have not broken it down that far, but I guess politics will be my blood sport now for until September rolls around. And they've got a primary up in New Hampshire on Tuesday. Everybody's saying Donald Trump wins the Republican side. Bernie freaking Sanders expected to win New Hampshire on the Democrat side of things. Who would have thought it? I mean, the guy looks just like Larry David off Curb Your Enthusiasm. Sounds a lot like Larry David. And he's promising everybody everything free, but people like Bernie. Michael, moving ahead, is he a contender? Or is this just, is he just warming up before Hillary puts the fangs in it?
I'm not sure. Until now, Bernie has sort of been, you know, just the crazy uncle, except minus the racist overtone. He's just said real strange things and had really strange ideas. He's promising a lot. I don't know how it would be possible for him to follow through on any or all of it. I see him falling off towards the end. He's a little too radical to win the nomination. I just don't think that he would stand a chance in the actual election if he came out from the left. So I think that he'll stand around for a little while. But as we all know in sports, that experience trumps the streakiness every now and then.
Dave, you look like Bernie Sanders. What do you think?
I'll have to agree that I don't know. I just don't see him being down towards the end. Right now, you know, as much as I've followed, I just really can't. We've got what till November. I think right now it just looks like it's going to be Trump versus Clinton. So, you know, and one thing to point out too, every election seems to fall on my birthday. Every election seems to fall on my birthday. Election Day, November 6th. So,
here's another political conspiracy theory that is developing on the Rebel Rise this morning.
Every I'm telling you, every election day falls on my birthday. I go and vote on my birthday every 4 years.
Well, all right. Well, I encourage you all to do that again this year, an important election. We're not endorsing any candidate on this show, by the way. So don't take our political banter back and forth as any kind of endorsement. Trump, don't do that. Don't do that on this show. Hey, I got a question for you, Michael. If Donald Trump was a football player, what position does he play?
Um, I don't know, does owner count? What about really bad commissioner?
Yeah, owner, yeah, that's it.
Wasn't he the absolute downfall of the USFL back in the 80s?
You know, I really think he was the motivating force behind the USFL. Now, he may have taken it down. If he did, he took it down on his own terms. I guarantee you that. But he owned the New Jersey Generals outright. He convinced Herschel Walker to turn his back on the NFL and come play for the New Jersey Generals. Straight out of college, which I always thought derailed Herschel's NFL career a little bit. But the USFL, I remember I was a kid when that was going on, and, man, they were players. They went after the best players. Hey, Steve Young, who was his first team? Who was Steve Young's first team, first pro team he played for?
Was it the Tampa under Steve Spurrier?
No, the Los Angeles Express got Steve Young. The L.A. Express of the USFL. I mean, so there were big-time players going in. Memphis had a team, the Showboats. That was a lot of fun. Pepper Rogers, the head coach of the Memphis Showboats. I really enjoyed that league. As a kid, it gave you football in the summertime, pro football.
How many years did that league stay around? It stayed around for a while, didn't it? I mean,
three,
it was
probably,
not like the XFL that was
seasons.
A one-and-done. You know.
Three or four seasons, something like that. Steve Spurrier was the head coach of the Philadelphia Stars. You had the Chicago.
I thought he was one of the coaches of a team in Florida.
Yeah, he ultimately went to Tampa Bay Bulls. Does that sound right? Tampa Bay Bulls. Man, we're drawing off institutional knowledge that is 30 years old here, so I could be wrong on some of this now. I will preface that, but Jacksonville Bulls. Maybe that's what it was.
I thought it was something. It was some sort of mascot that had guns. It was like some Wild West type thing. I'm trying to.
Do that nowadays, man. The political correct police would get you if you had a mascot with guns, huh? The league played three seasons, 1983 through 85.
Didn't Donald Trump try and take him head-to-head with the NFL going in the fall? And that was ultimately, he sued for that the USFL was monopolizing, or that the NFL was monopolizing football, and he won a $3 settlement off of it.
Could very well
I'm pretty
be
sure that's how it all ended, which is so weird because Donald Trump is never arrogant, and that was sort of the downfall of the USFL.
Let me clarify a couple of things. The Philadelphia Stars were coached by Jim Mora, okay, not Spurrier. Spurrier was down in one of those Florida teams for a little while. I'm trying to look now as to who it was. L.A. Express, they did sign BYU quarterback Steve Young, $40 million guaranteed contract. At the time, it was the largest contract in professional football history.
Tampa Bay Bandits.
Tampa Bay Bandits, that's it, yes. The Tampa Bay Bandits. Man, somebody needs to resurrect that so we'll have pro football in the summertime. Maybe if Trump falls short in his bid to become the next commander-in-chief, he'll turn his attention back to the USFL. That would be a lot of fun right there. All right, talking about football, look, guys, I had a chance this weekend. I went up to Memphis to this Grind City Classic Combine. It was held at the D1 training facility in Collierville, and I got a chance to watch 2019 MUS, Memphis University School cornerback Maurice Hampton work. Boy, he's good. I'm going to tell you, he's every bit as good as advertised. Probably the biggest thing that came out of it is Cordarian Richardson, the 2017 running back out of Trezevant in Memphis, did not work out at the combine, but he came by, and I had a chance to talk to Cordarian, interview Cordarian. Also, his head coach, Kelly White, was there all day, and I had a chance to hang with him for a little while. And I can tell you this, that despite what Cordarian tweeted out back on January the 3rd, that he had a top 8 and Ole Miss was not in it, that has changed. That has, in fact, changed. That is per Cordarian himself. As I'm sure you watched the video interview that was up yesterday where he clarified and verified that, and per his head coach, too. Ole Miss is in the thick of it for Cordarian Richardson. There are no leaders at this early point, but Cordarian very susceptible to wanting to be recruited hard by the Rebels. So don't write him off as one of those one or two running back spots that Ole Miss is going to look towards in this 2017 class. Right now, the new 247 teams for 247 Sports team recruiting rankings are out for the 2017 class. Ole Miss was one commitment, ranked 35th in the nation. So that's your starting point for this class. How much further up the ladder will this class climb? Of course, that one commit, Didi Bowie, the wide receiver out of Morton, Mississippi. And Dave, you got a chance to watch Bowie in a camp setting. What are your thoughts on him as a receiver?
Tremendous length and speed, especially for his age. And you know, he could definitely be a guy that is fills out on that wide out. So you know, that is a big get for 2017 with Ole Miss, and Ole Miss is in it for some other receivers. We talked on previous podcast about T Liggins. There's another guy right there who he recently decommitted from Tennessee last week. That's another guy who has tremendous length, a 6'5" wide receiver. That's a guy who can go out there and get the ball. So, you know, Ole Miss is known to be getting that reputation over the years of being wide receiver U. And if you just sit back and look at the targets right now, it looks like they're just going to keep continuing to, you know, build that reputation.
Well, at least over the last few years, I think you're adequate in saying that. Michael, you had a chance to talk with Ole Miss pitcher Sean Johnson on Sunday and see the Rebels practice. What can you tell us about Mike Bianco's ball club? How are they looking right now as opening day inches closer and closer?
I can tell you this much: there's a lot of there's been a lot of excitement around on the field with the team. Mike Bianco, who there are some coaches who speak in hyperbole. I hate to do this to Coach Freeze, but he says phenomenal, even more than Sir Donald Trump does. He says phenomenal quite a bit. But Mike Bianco will be honest with you, and he says, this is my best bullpen I've had since I've been at Ole Miss. This is the best defensive team I've had since I've been at Ole Miss, and this is the fastest team I've had since I've been at Ole Miss. And that says a lot for just how exciting this team is going to be. There's going to be a lot of hit and run, a lot of stealing, a lot of putting opposing defenses in bad spots. And if they can carry a lead into about the seventh inning, Coach Bianco feels really good about closing that game out right. Of course, returning an ace closer like Wyatt Short is huge. And there's a lot of setup guys and relievers that Coach Bianco trusts with the ball. And I heard something pretty interesting from a source of mine with the program, is that Chad Smith, who was a reliever in junior college last year before getting drafted by the Cleveland Indians, who, if he didn't get injured, probably would have gone much higher in the draft and would have signed with Cleveland instead of coming to Oxford. It looks like he's going to work his way into the rotation. He really has some filthy stuff, and he's pitched really well in the scrimmages and in bullpen sessions. And so that looks like that's going to be two of the three in the rotation, are Smith as well as Bramlett. And there's a lot of guys fighting for that third spot. It could be one of the freshmen. They pitched pretty well. It could be Sean Johnson. There's a lot of guys vying for that spot, but this team hasn't been very heralded by a lot of preseason services, but you're going to see probably three guys in the outfield at any given time that run a 6'6" or better 60-yard dash. And then J.B. Woodman, he's been working on shortening his swing. He has some really quick hands, and he is absolutely shooting balls out to right. So you're going to see him pulling a lot of fastballs out that way. And probably costing a lot of beer for a lot of folks out there in right. And Henry Lartigue is someone that a lot of folks may be sleeping on, thinking about the power coming from Bortles and Woodman. But Lartigue, he's crushing the ball in the preseason. He is he's looking really good. Like, he can be a middle of the lineup sort of hitter that we've come accustomed to with Mike Bianco catchers over the years. So this is a team that it reminds me, I hate to put this on them, but it reminds me of that College World Series team from a few years ago that has a lot of really talented juniors, a lot of speed, an ace on Friday, and an experienced and talented closer. So the expectations for this team are really high inside the program, much higher than, you know, the number 24 rank, and they got outside of it. But they're really focused on getting this thing started, and it should be some exciting baseball this spring.
Phenomenal. So you're saying that Hugh Freeze might have been sandbagging a little bit back last spring and through fall camp when he was saying that the quarterback battle was so close. Is that what you're saying, Michael?
I'm sure Hugh, no matter how many times he said that, he still couldn't convince him. That was actually going on.
And you look around now, and the two guys involved with the quarterback battle, with Chad Kelly no longer on the team, Devontae Kincaid has transferred to Grambling, and then we learned factually what we already knew over the weekend, that Ryan Buchanan was hanging it up. I had heard reports that he had not been at any of the running or the lifting or anything since school had resumed, And word was out already. In a situation like that, you want to give the player the dignity of making the call on his own, and he did on Saturday. We wish Ryan Buchanan well. Things didn't work out for him, and honestly, when you look at the quarterback pitcher, they weren't going to work out for him. The writing was on the wall. You've got a Heisman Trophy hopeful coming back for his senior year. And then you just signed the number one quarterback in America as part of the 2016 class. And I'm telling you all, you're sleeping on Jason Pellerin, the redshirt freshman out of Louisiana. Jason Pellerin is going to be a factor. Quit asking when they're going to move him to linebacker and tight end. It ain't happening. I'm telling you, the kid can play quarterback. And a lot of people have been premature in writing off Jason Pellerin's fate in taking snaps behind the center at Ole Miss. That's what I'll say. But and nevertheless, though, we wish Ryan Buchanan all the luck in the world in his future. I think he's going to be the governor of Mississippi one day. He's that kind of kid.
He's bright.
Everybody loves him. Yeah, he handles his business, and he is a very bright young man that was able to figure this out on his own. You know, if he wanted to hold extra points and field goals for the next couple of years. But it's a high price to pay to hold extra points and field goals with all the hard work and dedication, self-discipline required to be on that football team. So certainly wish Ryan well. Hugh Freeze had nothing but good things to say about him when the announcement came out via Twitter. And, there you go. So all of a sudden the Rebels are down to three scholarship quarterbacks on the roster. The fourth guy would be Drew Davis, I guess, the former North Carolina Tar Heel that is a walk-on at Ole Miss. And do you guys, Michael, Dave, do you guys know who his father is? Really?
He's got some Ole Miss legacy to him, doesn't he?
No.
Butch Davis.
Michael. Butch Davis.
Davis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Butch Davis, former head coach of Miami Hurricanes, North Carolina Tar Heels, is his dad. So how about that? So some good football pedigree there, and obviously good football bloodlines. And says something about your program when a coach as accomplished as Butch Davis is has his son playing there. So well, that's going to do it for us today. We're 45 minutes deep into this thing. We certainly, as always, appreciate you for giving us your time to listen to us opine about Ole Miss sports. For Michael Quirk and Dave Bevan, I'm David Johnson, and as always, hotty toddy.